Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
Your eyes have it. And you have Dr. Robert Abel Jr., the Wizard of Eyes.
Well, we're going to talk about the illustrator's eye. Could be yours. Could be what you're seeing. Could be what you're not seeing. Well, we're so fortunate to have an expert illustrator and computer artist and long-term teacher, Nancy Willis of Birdsong Books, going to share some insights into how vision and images can be modified by intention and reconstruction. So, Nancy, thanks for being with us today, and tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to do what you do so well.
Well, thanks for having me on your show, Rob. My background, believe it or not, I knew from about age 9 that I wanted to be an artist. And, of course, my parents thought that was not the wisest choice, so they steered me at least into going into college with a secondary art education degree so that I could teach and earn a living. But, unfortunately, there were very few jobs available, so the students got together and created a graphic design degree program at the University of Delaware. And I was one of the first students to graduate with that degree. And I worked in the graphic design industry for about 13 years, but I always wanted to do illustration. And at the time, people were telling me, well, there isn't going to be any fine art illustration. Photography is the new rage. But they hadn't counted on baby boomers growing up and having children and wanting to read to them books that they remembered with really nice hand-done illustrations. So an opportunity presented itself, and I slid into illustration and fine art. And after illustrating some children's books, I decided that I had my own stories to tell. I had been working as a wildlife rehabilitator volunteer at Tri-State Bird Rescue, and I always had a passion for nature as well as art. And so in 1998, I formed Birdsong Books, which is a small publisher of nature books for kids. And after going out and doing a lot of author visits to schools, I realized that I love teaching, which is really what I started at. And I've been teaching at Wilmington University since 2003. Fine arts courses like basic design and drawing and illustration and painting, that kind of thing.
How would you define seeing if you're going to extract that from the teaching component and from the illustrating component? How do you define that role of the vision?
For me, seeing, of course, it's not just an eye thing, it's a brain thing, and also, you know, tying in your ability to coordinate what you're seeing with what you're thinking and what your hand is doing. So when I do, for example, the nonfiction nature books that I do for kids, my illustrations have to be what's called scientifically accurate. They're reviewed by biologists and scientists. So I have to use a lot of visual reference. I borrow specimens from museums whenever possible. I use direct observation. I make photographs of my own and sketches. And I can give you an example from the book Red Knot, A Shorebird's Incredible Journey. I went out to participate in shorebird banding. So I got to actually see shorebird behavior and hold actual shorebirds while they were being banded. And also I went out to census horseshoe crabs because the red knots come to Delaware every spring and they time their arrival when the horseshoe crabs spawn. So I'm out in the middle of the night with a headlamp and I'm wandering around counting horseshoe crabs, and I noticed that they lay their eggs at the high tide line. This was different from anything else that I'd seen in literature and other books that showed the horseshoe crabs kind of laying their eggs in the sand dunes. So for me, it's a completely integrated process of seeing and understanding to present a realistic picture to the audience.
And in a sense, what you're saying is you are bringing science to people through education entertainment.
I guess that's a really good way of putting it, yes.
We could actually call it edutainment.
Okay.
And because especially when young people are still formative and they're still open with awe and discovery. It means so much to have this kind of imagery and to build up these kind of insights into their future observations. So it's not just the moment. You're teaching them to think and to look even deeply.
Well, and the whole goal also is to get kids interested and excited about paying more attention to what is going on around them. You know, there's such an emphasis on viewing two-dimensional pixelated images on smartphones and tablets and such like that. And really, young people are sort of losing the ability to understand depth perception, to actually discern detail, you know, in the landscape around them. So, you know, that's part of the goal.
Well, it sounds like, you know, they also, by reading a book and having the tactile and the audio and the visual combined, they get much more than a flat pixel screen, as you're saying.
Yes.
And we had discussed before, but I think it's important for you to share, how can looking at master artworks and books for children, how does that help people like you and me and the public better see and appreciate our own world?
Well, master artworks, of course, you know, give us an insight into the artist's perception of the world around them and how they interpret that. I mean, when I teach, I use a couple of tricks, for example. So let's say I'm setting up a still life for students. And what I point out to them is that when light hits an object, and you can see this in landscape or still life paintings, I'm sorry, by master artists. When light hits an object, it doesn't just stop. It moves around that object. So rarely will you find highlights or core shadows on the edges of objects. So what I get them to do is I get them to create a value scale where one is white and five is black. And then when they draw their line art, a drawing of the still life, I get them to actually put the numbers in to force them to focus on all parts of the objects and to see relationships, you know, between one object and another. And if we're doing landscapes, okay, I don't know if you've ever gone out and sat with a sketchbook and tried to draw a landscape, but it's pretty confusing. I mean, there's just trees and bushes and stuff everywhere. So I give them a viewfinder. It's basically a card with a little rectangle cut out of it that they can move closer or farther from their face and move it around to find a focal point or to hone in on a certain aspect of a landscape. So those are some tricks that can help improve sight. But, you know, when you talk about master art and its relationship to us, the public or the viewers or whatever, you know, really one to focus on perhaps would be Claude Monet or the Impressionists, because the invention of lead tubes that you could put oil paint in really got artists out of their studios and outside to observe nature directly. So we all know that the sky is blue and the grass is green, right? Would you agree?
Yeah.
Okay, so, but, you know, people like Monet and the Impressionists saw color as a function of light that wasn't constant. It changed with the time of day, the season of the year, the type of weather. So he would go out with a stack of canvases, and he would start a painting and maybe work from, you know, 8 in the morning till 11, and then he realized the light was changing. He'd pick up another canvas and work through the noontime, and then another one, say, at dusk.
We're going to have to wrap up, Nancy.
Okay.
But this is fascinating. And I did a segment previously on optical illusions and how we have prejudicial vision. So you may want to see that sometime.